The conference is now being recorded.
Welcome to the final quarter financial year 2017, NAOS Absolute Opportunities Company Limited Investor Conference Call. Your host is Sebastian Evans, Managing Director and Chief Investment Officer of NAOS Asset Management Limited. Please go ahead, Sebastian.
Great, thank you. That's a very long mouthful of an introduction. Welcome everyone to the, I suppose, the year in review, financial year in review for 2017 for NAC, or the NAOS Absolute Opportunities Company. I'll just refer to it as NAC, a lot easier. The presentation material was released to the ASX, I think, about half an hour ago. So for people who are new on the call, obviously we send an invite a week or so ago, and then the material that I speak to is released about half an hour before the presentation. And then at the very end, we'll have a Q&A discussion. Some people will email in questions, and some people are more than happy to ask a question over the telephone. So I'll refer to the PowerPoint document, and if you like, I'll probably just get into straight in. I'll move straight through to slide 5, because it's a slightly longer presentation, just as it is the end of the financial year. So the thing that matters for everyone, obviously, is the performance. So I'll touch on two figures. So obviously for the quarter, the fund returned negative 2.26% against our benchmark, which will, in theory, will always be positive. Which was up 1.07%. So it's an underperformance of about negative 3.33%. So without sounding too negative, obviously it was a challenging quarter. And if you look at the year, we returned about 6.7% versus the index, versus the benchmark, which returned 4.39%. If you overlay the index against that, obviously the all ordinaries, and especially the larger companies, so the ASX 100, had a much better year than that. I believe it was probably closer in the mid-teens, give or take. So there's a year in review slide here, but I think, you know, without a doubt it was a challenging year for the investment team, and I think, you know, I can remember myself harping on about this 12 months ago that, you know, it'd be nice to average 25% per annum year in, year out, as we had done for 2 years or at that time. It's obviously a hard act to follow, and you know, when you run a concentrated portfolio like we do, your performance does ebb and flow with those stock-specific movements, unfortunately. And you know, I know there's been a lot of chat about passive versus active, and obviously, you know, when the flood of passive money goes in, obviously it pushes the index higher because a lot of that money goes into, you know, the big liquid companies like the banks, Wesfarmers, Woolworths, Telstra, companies like that. Looking at the portfolio breakdown, there's 17 positions, both long and short, so that's inclusive. The average market cap, or the portfolio weighted market cap, I think it's important to differentiate between the two, is about $350 million, so very much in that mid-cap space, as we've said a number of times. You know, pleasingly, looking at the risk statistics, you know, I think, you know, the most important thing we try to focus on is we're all about not losing money for our investors or our shareholders, and you can see through our standard deviation that our volatility is still lower than the market, even with a much more concentrated portfolio, and the downside deviation is only about 3%. So when we have a negative month, they tend to be very small in nature, so you're talking about 0.5s, 1s, or maybe even 1.5. So I think, you know, throughout the year, and that was the year that, you know, it felt like, was, you know, we're able to limit the downside. Where we clearly missed out on was we weren't able to maximise the upside like we had been able to in the previous couple of years. On slide 6, looking at the attribution. So we'll try to extend this eventually, but to be fair, there's probably not a lot to talk about because it hasn't changed too much. And that's probably more of a function of the year that has. But it just gives you an idea of where we've been able to make our money since inception for the fund, so over that 2.5 year or 2 years and 7 months period. So clearly across a wide range of stocks, very industrial focused, and I do get the question all the time. Some of these have not just been long positions. You know, one or two of them may have been a pure short position, and it's probably reasonably easy for people to work out which one, or maybe plural in that case. Looking at slide 7, and I think it's important we try to be as transparent as absolutely possible for all our shareholders, And this looks at, it's one thing to have a good annualized return, but I think it's another thing to show you what your return distribution or return profile looks like. And it just highlights it again. So we've been able to obviously outperform or have strong positive months and at the same time try to minimize our negative returns since inception. Looking at slide 8, this just looks at the NTA analysis and the capital management analysis or the capital structure of the business. So as of, I think, as of 30th of June, the NTA was $1.08. Pre-unrealized gains tax though, so obviously we're sitting on a quite a lot of unrealized gains, the NTA is $1.10. The share price as of the 30th of June was about 103.5. I think as of yesterday it was about $1.05, give or take. And there it shows you obviously the shares on issue has increased slightly to 52.5 million, and I believe the director shareholdings have also increased to almost 6.7 million as well. So very much aligned with all of our shareholders. The dividend profile has not changed yet. The interim dividend, we will announce that with our results, which we will look to get out, I believe, in the third week of August. So we'll release our full set of results, not just an unaudited figure, it'll be a fully audited set of accounts. And then looking at the director's holding again, it just looks at how those holdings have changed since inception. All directors have been significant acquirers of stock since NAC listed. On slide 11, it looks at just the net equity exposure, and we did get one question here, which I'll touch on here because it's obviously quite timely. It just looks at how the fund is structured. So our net equity exposure is about 86%, our short exposure is about 18-19%, and I think that's important to note. A lot of people ask us this. We consider ourselves probably a long bias fund. We're not, people use the word hedge fund or whatever they may use. We tend to be 60 to 70 or 80% long, and you tend to be short very opportunistically. So, might be short, we're currently short two stocks, for example. It might be two, three, four, or five, but they tend to be smaller in nature and more short-term focused, where our long book is much more concentrated, have larger positions, and very much they tend to, I suppose, develop over the longer term, so whether it be 12, 24, or 36 months. But the point I wanted to get across is, yes, we did raise capital, and one of the questions we got is, well, have you deployed that capital? And based on that chart, you can see that we have. So we have not just raised capital for the sake of raising capital. We have raised capital for the, I suppose, the function of we believe we can generate strong returns for our shareholders and we can put that money to work. And that chart shows you that we have and will continue to do so. Looking at the breakdown of the industry exposure, it gives you a fair idea, and because we are so industrial focused, we'll give you a fair idea of where we always are, but financials, commercial services, media, telco and software is where we tend to find most of our opportunity, and we'll always have a significant focus on those industries. Just some of the notable company meetings on slide 13. People like to know what we've been looking at and who we've been in touch with. And some of the more notable names, I suppose, that have been topical of late. So obviously Pengana Capital, which was the old Hunter Hall. They merged, Hunter Hall merged with Pengana and created, a large boutique company that's actually now listed on the stock exchange. Elders Group, Bingo Industries has been very topical. That's a waste management business that's been sort of put together over the past 6 to 7 years. And Amaysim, another one, has been very topical. They operate in the telco space, but they operate in the prepaid SIM card market. So they, if you're a tourist, you come to Australia, you need a SIM card, you go to Amaysim and you might order it over the internet or whatever it may be. But an industry that's been under a lot of pressure, obviously, you can look at the Telstra share price and work that one out for yourself. Slide 14 looks to, I suppose, what everyone's really interested in, and I've just done a couple of slides on a market outlook and, I suppose, the year that was. The slide 15 just looks at the, I suppose, the year in review, and, I just touched on two stocks, I think, for myself that probably stood out for the investment team. The first one was Gentrack, a business we've been invested in now for a number of years, probably a couple of years. Business out of New Zealand, software business, was very poorly understood. It was a flunk as an IPO because they downgraded about a week later post-IPO. To be fair, no fault of their own. They're fundamentally an excellent business. It was our top positive contributor for the year. I suppose they were able to regain the confidence of the market by showing, you know, good conservative organic growth, not trying to shoot the lights out, but still doing 10 to 15% per annum. Excellent cash flow conversion, very conservative. They expense all their R&D. They don't capitalise it and try and inflate their margins. And they use their cash balance to help them make a what we think is a good strategic acquisition in the UK utilities market in that software space. So an excellent business, management are aligned. You know, one that really ticked the boxes for us. Unfortunately, there doesn't seem to be too many opportunities like that currently. One of the other ones that a lot of people on the call would know about, Ben Rundle here was a big advocate of Elders over the past 6 to 12 months, especially at our shareholder briefing probably 6 months ago. And key, you know, post the result, that's a business that, you know, continued to be unloved. But, you know, they're very much focused on that model that's, you know, they're looking for capital efficiencies, you know, low use of capital, get their return on invested capital up. They've been able to de-gear and simplify the balance sheet by removing those preference shares, I believe. And then also been able to take advantage of the significant industry tailwinds in that agricultural space. There's been a lot of focus on that space, a lot of money going into that industry, and they've really been able to use that to their advantage. And yeah, I think more and more you've been able to see more investors now, you know, take the blinkers off and not just remember it for what it was, but maybe starting to take a fresh look of, you know, what it could be. And then on that last point, as I said, I do want to stress that we have used all the funds from the SPPM placement, and it's important to note they just haven't gone into long positions, but the way shorting works, even if it is opportunistically, you do need capital from time to time to manage your short portfolio position. You know, one that, you know, everyone likes to be fair, people aren't so interested in where you did well. I think everyone's interested to see where we can improve. And, you know, without a doubt, it's a year of trying to improve. You know, NAC was clearly not a beneficiary of the ASX 100 rally over the past 12 months. I don't think we're disappointed by that because we're very much a mid-cap focused business here. But in saying that, I think there were some clear opportunities that the investment team missed. I think we're all aware of them. We're probably there or thereabouts, but unfortunately we didn't have the conviction that we probably needed to at that time. And secondly, I think, you know, even in the shorting space, we've been very close on a number of, without mentioning names, on a number of positions where we were short. And unfortunately, shorting is, even if you're only in small positions, like, you know, 2 or 3% positions, the thing that tends to not ruin your performance and make it hard is patience. You know, everyone's inherently positive when it comes to stock market and valuations. So you have to be quite patient sometimes shorting, and I think that can eat away at you, and you tend to feel like you've got that thesis wrong. You know, I think we've had positions where we've been short, unfortunately, and we've just closed the position, and the next day that same business is downgraded, and we've missed some significant performance. So it felt like that was the year that was. In saying that, it definitely wasn't a bad year. I think a 7% return almost is not a bad year, but definitely there is room for improvement. I think we're all aware of that, and we seek to definitely do better for the years ahead. Just touching on the market, and as I stress with these slides, I am not an expert when it comes to the market or a macro outlook or even domestic economics. But I think there's a few key points that, you know, we do touch on. And, you know, it's funny, you look at the paper and we've gone through so many different cycles, and now all of a sudden we're all talking about reflation. So, you know, the RBA came out yesterday with their minutes and said, you know, 3.5% is the ideal target cash rate for them. So now everyone's talking about rates are on the rise, inflation's on the rise. But, you know, I think a lot of people miss for that to happen, there needs to be an amount or a fair amount of economic growth around. And to be fair, I think we're still not convinced, especially from a lot of the feedback we get from maybe not the construction and building related companies, but definitely some more of those industrial related businesses. I mean, you know, retailers, they've got their own issues, but even some of the services company, I think it's not as rosy as what it's made out to be. There's a chart on the next page I'll go through, but it just highlights, you know, the divergence in performance by some of the industries that had outperformed and how that's reversed. But I think, you know, in those last 4 points, I've just tried to highlight the negatives and the positives of a reflation trade, and I think everyone talks about rising rates. You know, the key negatives for us is obviously if you get servicing costs that will increase, you know, so you want to steer clear from higher geared companies. You've got your cost base increase through wage inflation potentially, although we haven't seen a lot of wage inflation. You know, one of the big reasons for that, people, is, you know, the lack of more unionised workforces as there was, you know, 20 or 30 years ago. You know, employees tend to have less power in the workplace. Increasing bond yields, and this is the interesting one, the potential for lower asset prices. You know, I suppose a warehouse is trading on a 5% cap rate. You know, what should it trade at if bond yields are now back to 5 or 6%, which is, in essence, the risk-free rate. But the big one, and this is the one a lot of people miss, is the qualitative factor. So if your risk-free rate increases, what effect will it have on the PE of certain businesses in the market? So what does it mean for your CSLs or your higher growth stocks, you know, such as our Minet phone? If your risk-free rate comes up, then obviously less, you know, more risky money will leave the market, and that means some of those higher PE stocks may fall, they may not fall. But there will be a divergence, there will be an effect on some industries more than others. And then the last point, I think a lot of people don't talk about this, but if you go through past history, you know, raising rates has been used, you know, to lean in the wind, I suppose, of economic growth, as my chairman said. You know, you tend to raise rates when economic growth is strong or increasing. So it's not necessarily a bad thing. So I think if we were to raise rates, you would look for more economic growth, which potentially leads obviously to higher revenues and potentially to more earnings growth for certain businesses. Just on slide 17, this, as mentioned, this looks at some of the industry divergence over the past, this is a two-year chart, but I've tried to highlight, I know these charts are hard to read, but I've highlighted four key lines there. You can see the white ones, industrials, the orange one is real estate sector or REITs, the purple's utilities, and the orange is, the other orange is healthcare. So you can see, you know, ever since, you know, maybe a bit before June, some more May, these have been significant underperformers when a market's probably been a reasonable performer, to be fair. And so it's telling you something. People are repositioning. They want less REIT exposure. Healthcare companies that have very high PEs, they also have their own issues, such as Medibank. And the more interesting one's industrials. So industrials are telling you something a little bit different. So there's clearly earnings pressure there. So it will be interesting. This has happened a few times. You know, it happened last September, you can see. It'll be interesting to see whether or not it continues to eventuate and will it carry on. Slide 18, this is just something topical one of the portfolio managers found here yesterday, and I think it's very interesting. CIMIC, you know, I suppose Australia's largest construction business, is listed, but owned by the Spanish, looked at a slide of, you know, their outlook for construction in Australia. And I think, as you can see, from 17 onwards, we're going to go through a boom in construction. And I think if you look at it specifically, and I went through this yesterday, you look at some of those projects, a good 70% of them are in New South Wales. And we're not talking about apartments here, we're talking about really substantial projects such as WestConnex, Sydney Metro, the new airport, four or five different rail lines, light rail. These are projects that will use a lot of resources, they will employ a lot of people, and hopefully that will lead to increased productivity over time. But this will, you know, if rates do increase and, you know, obviously consumer confidence comes off, I think we may go through a stage now where this will definitely prop up the economy for a number of years. I think people, when you see the size of some of these projects, they underestimate how much money is going in to the infrastructure of this nation over the next 5 or 6 years. So I know I always finish on this, but, you know, what do we try to do here at NAOS? And as I say, day in, day out, we try to focus on the controllable. We try to focus on what we can understand. We don't try to be something that we're not. We look for businesses with existing revenue streams, the ability to drive revenue or margin growth through cost cutting, or drive revenue through, you know, new products or market share gains. We like balance sheet flexibility. And we want companies that aren't being valued on tomorrow's earnings. You know, they may be valued on today's earnings, but we're looking for you know, what could they be worth in 2 or 3 years' time? And we like proven management teams and businesses, and us especially, that we all stick to our core competency. We stick to what we're good at. We don't venture into things where there's too much risk, and we have little competency in what we're doing. Slide 20 is a quote I think everyone should read, but just following on from that, slide 21 just looked at all the different ways our shareholders can keep in touch with us if they so wish. And then slide 22 looks at the team, and there will be a new team member joining us next month, so I will speak to that at the next conference call. So with that, operator, I'd just like to open it up to any questions if there are any.
Thank you, Sebastian. Guests are invited to ask questions by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. You'll be placed in a queue. Please listen for your name and I'll introduce you through to the call. At this stage, Sebastian, we don't have any questions.
Okay. If that's the case, we always get quite a few emails. So if you prefer to email me or any member of the team, it'll probably get to me either way. So more than happy to talk to directly over the phone or through email. And as always, we really do appreciate the support of our shareholders. We're along with our shareholders, and we thank you for your patience over the past year. And we do hope we can hopefully have a better year for our shareholders. So thank you again, and thanks for listening, and enjoy the rest of your day.